Like Batman and Bruce Wayne, like Clark Kent and Superman, or Clark Kent and Kal-El, if you will.
Huh?
There are two Jeff Merricks. There's the Jeff Merrick the world sees, the one on TV, the big time radio host who gets to host Hockey Central.
This guy in America too. It's really tight around the sides, almost down to the bone.
The Mark Mathot.
It's even shorter than the Mark Mathot, dude. You got a clip today, good.
And then there's the Jeff Merrick that we all know and love, the laid-back dude on this very podcast. Now, I love when I get an opportunity to listen to the other Jeff Merrick, and I got a chance today. He's hosting Hockey Central. He was Joe Professional talking to Bill Daly. We'll talk about that interview in 1 second. But the one thing I wanted to bring up about your interviewing prowess, because I think, of course, before we started doing the show together, I listened to you for many, many moons on Hockey Night in Canada Radio and always loved listening to the way you conducted those interviews. There is one thing that you do that I don't think I've ever heard anybody else do, and it's one of my favorite things that you do during interviews. And you do it whether you're Clark Kent or Superman, whether you are Bruce Wayne or Batman. This is what you do during interviews. Pretend you're finishing. Pretend I'm Jeff Merrick interviewing you, and you're finishing an answer. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, really, what it comes down to is what's going to be best for that franchise in the long term.
Jeff Merrick, curious. And then you ask the question. I love that. That's one of my favorite things. And you did it today with Bill Daly. It's the curious thing. Okay. It's like...
Okay, there's a couple of different little radio tricks that I've picked up along the way.
Okay.
One of them is dropping the word curious in there.
The reason
I always do that is... I'm giving away all these interviewing secrets that I've called for 20 years in the industry. Here's an industry secret for all you.
All you kids at home, listen
up. All
you
kids at home want to be radio broadcasters. Here's what you do. First of all, the best follow-up question is always, what do you mean by that? Because it puts the other person in a position where they don't feel they've given a sufficient answer, so their job is not done, and they tend to give you more. But in order to ask that question, you really have to swallow your ego. Because it makes you seem like Columbo dumb, but you're really the most brilliant guy in the room by asking that question. If you can swallow your ego and say, "What do you mean by that?"
Well, that's really interesting because usually in that situation, my follow-up question is, "What the fuck was that supposed to mean?" And that usually closes down.
That kind of puts people on the defensive a little bit. I tend to go the Columbo style, but whenever I say curious, I've always found. You know, it puts people in a position where they want to give. Like, when you're interviewing someone, they want to satisfy your question. They don't want to give everything. Obviously, there are some things they would like to protect. But when they're put in a position that they need to solve a riddle that you're going to ask them, I always find that they give you more. And just by saying the simple word, Craig Wyshynski, curious, your thoughts.
Curious.
Yeah, just by saying that, just by putting that word, that little worm of a word in your ear. I've found over the course of doing radio for how many years now, going back to 95, that you tend to get a better answer.
I love it.
Just the word curious?
It's great. It's great.
Listen, it's you know what? You're 100% right about the two Jeff Merricks. It's funny. I was just reading about just the nature of people being two people at the same time. One, your conscious self, and then your unconscious self that, you know, that breathes. That watches, that shapes its own bones.
Your unconscious self is here, right? That's the person I'm talking to now?
Well, see, it's funny because in broadcasting, I've made this point before on the podcast, I think as well. This is as close to the real me as you're going to get anywhere, as you can in broadcasting, because this is you, it's me, it's our microphones, and it's our brains, and that's it, and it's long form. So you don't have to worry about, I got to hustle up and get to this question really fast. Plus, there's no television cameras around, so you don't have to look and sound like you're doing television. That's what I love about podcasts. It is as close to the human being as you're going to get. Don't have to hit stop sets. Don't have to be a TV boy. It is just you, and that's it. And you have enough rope. Like, the thing about podcasts, I find, is it gives you enough rope to either swing or hang. It's up to you. You can hang yourself, fry yourself, sizzle yourself, expose yourself, or you can use this as a launching pad to sort of allow people a better peek inside your brain to find out exactly what makes you tick. Like, regardless of the nature of the podcast, whether it's a podcast about hockey, whether it's a podcast about mechanics, about entertainment, about politics, I find the thing that I'm most curious about is, who am I and who am I listening to? Who is this person?
And this format allows for exploration of those subjects in ways that other formats don't. And I mean, some of the best podcasting that I think we do on this podcast, which, by the way, is the number 10 podcast, sports podcast in the United States.
Thank you
come
very
on. Much.
Thank Woo! You very much. Thank you, folks.
The best, some of the best conversations we have are the ones where they just take flight and just go different places. And not necessarily the goofy ass stuff that we do towards the end of the show.
I do like that though.
Which is great. That's but more along the lines of just over. Like you're able to kind of keep drilling past the point where you have to stop in a more traditional format. And I've always appreciated that about the podcast.
Yeah, like in a perfect world, wish, I'm not sure where you're at, because I know you love doing the blog, and listen, I love doing my TV work, and it's rewarding for what it is and in its own rights. But listen, man, if it were my job every day to do a podcast for 3 hours every day, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. Mm. If that would be my job, to turn on the microphone and talk to you for 3 hours, and that was it, 5 days a week, and then my work here is done, I can go on and live my life, I'd be a happy guy.
So you're saying Tim and Sid used to be happy.
But look at them now. They got to get dressed up to be on Sportsnet 360. Getting dragged. Oh, by the way, I don't know how I feel about this. Matty Brown, he's filling in for Jeff Has a Party, producing Tim and Sid the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. So he's doing the pa-pa-pa-pow. So watch, when he comes back, he'll have all these new ideas for sound effects
without
on
question.
The podcast. You watch.
How was your conversation with the deputy commissioner today?
I've always enjoyed either talking to Bill on the air or off the air. And I really developed, back in the lockdown in 2005, when I was doing the League's Lunch radio show with Bill Waters, I really got a little bit more of a sense of what Bill Daly is all about and who Bill Daly is. And that was a nasty locket. I mean, that was Bring Me the Head of Bob Goodenow. That was Gary Bettman in one camp and Bob Goodenow in the other camp. And they were, I mean, these guys, that was as close to, you know, boardroom war as we've ever seen. No one was giving an inch. You know, it took a certain party on the NHLPA side to cave in order to end that lockout. Hey, Vancouver Canucks. And I got the sense that through all of it, Bill was the one main player in the entire lockout that I think took it personally. And every time that I would talk to Bill or see Bill on the air or off the air, I really got a sense that it hurt him to have to go through this and put hockey through this and put hockey fans through this. Like, I think he was the one guy who couldn't have that stiff spine through all of it, that he was someone who took it personally and no, not that he was, you know, emotional about it. We have to end this lockout. Think of the children. What are we doing to the game? But I really felt that he took it personally. I really felt that there's a kind soul in that football player from Rutgers who understood the human element of it. And so from that point on, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Bill Daly.
He does, but I'll say this though, that I've had some really great conversations with Bill Daly. Where he comes off as being, I know he gets portrayed as the hatchet man because sometimes he has to say the things that Gary doesn't. But he's far more approachable than Bettman. And he's far more reasonable when you talk to him than Bettman. But at no point do you ever not believe that this man, with every fiber of his being, believes the company line. Like, he is a staunch defender of the league and everything that goes into their philosophy, their approach. They're right, the union's wrong. Like, at no point do you believe he's just buying the bullshit and taking a check. Like, he embodies it. And I've always also respected that about him, too.
And true, and I like the way he couches everything as well. I mean, the way he makes frames around his statement is very casual. And if you ever talk to Bill, I mean, everything is couched in a very matter-of-fact way. He doesn't beat you over the head with it. It may be the exact same words that Gary Bettman is using. It may be the exact same lingo that Bob Batterman is using. But Bill Daly puts it in a much more sort of friendly and conversational tone. I really do wonder, wish somewhere down the road, when Bill Daly is the commissioner of the NHL. And I'm not sure, but I think that John Collins may have moved on to something else by then. But I don't even know if he has the aspirations to be the commissioner. But one day when Bill Daly is the commissioner of the NHL, I wonder how much, if at all, he changes.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like the assistant coach in the NHL can be nice guy Eddie. Hey, wife and kids having a barbecue. Why don't you come by this weekend? You can't do that as a head coach. And there's some things that Gary Bettman just can't do by virtue of his title that Bill Daly can as deputy commissioner. I wonder if that changes when he becomes a commissioner.
I was just thinking about the difference in messaging. Like, Bill Daly will go like, you know, we have to have cost certainty to survive versus we have to have cost certainty to survive.
It's See, the thing with Bill is he almost seems to me to be someone who likes the conversation, where Gary
loves the debate.
One guy is about conversation and the other guy is about confrontation. And I think Gary Bettman really does enjoy confrontation. When it comes to dealing with the National Hockey League Players Association.
I would also venture to say that one guy is about negotiation and the other guy is about annihilation, personally.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because there always was that feeling, and I believe this to be true, that the day before the CBA expired in 2004 in September, that Ted Saskin and Bill Daly at Hurley's in that Irish bar that we all love in Montreal, that they put the CBA together, presented it to both sides, and it was shot down.
As I've mentioned before on the show, Hurley's is the place where the bartender will literally slap your hand if you try to take the Guinness before
it's ready.
That's right.
It's a great spot, eh? I love Hurley's.
It's a great spot.
If you've never been to a game in Montreal, do yourself a favor, either before the game, after the game, at some point during the weekend, go get yourself a couple of drinks at Hurley's. It is a legendary bar in Montreal, just up the street from the Bell Centre. And trust me, all of your favorite hockey players have been there.
Mm-hmm. So, Daly, for those who didn't hear it on Hockey Central today, you and Denny Potvin and my trade deadline partner, Gord Stelectricity, what did Daly have to say about? Because I wanted to listen because I knew that you, sir, would have the stones to bring up the very topic we've talked about on this podcast for most of the week, which is,
what did Brendan Shanahan know, and when did he know it?
So what did Daly have to say about your conspiracy theory on Brendan Shanahan?
Bill Daly is a very – Bill Daly doesn't want to throw anyone under the bus. I did get
– He is not Randy Carlyle.
Oh, boy. We'll get to Jake Gardner in a second. That's right. Player X, whose name just happens to rhyme with Jake Gardner. I mean, it was pretty obvious in the interview that he did not want to throw Tim Leiwicki under the bus. He did say that he didn't like the way the negotiation was handled, how quickly it escalated. I think at the end of it, my main takeaway from talking to Bill today is, one, I think the NHL would have, had they had the opportunity to do it again, you know, pressed further on Tim Leiwicki that this is not the time to do this, that this is not the time to make this move, that the season is still going on. This can be done in the off season, and I think that the NHL, I mean, Bill is wonderful at deflecting to protect partners, and the NHL is a member squad, and Brendan Shanahan is now the president of that organization. What Bill did was he kind of took one for the team and almost said, you know, we probably could have shut this off sooner. We could have done this to make sure this didn't happen. The overarching umbrella to all of it is the sense that I got that they weren't thrilled with Shanahan taking the job at this time, but they really weren't thrilled with Tim Leiwicki's aggressive pursuit of Brendan Shanahan at this time.
That's the sense one gets. And especially because Leiwicki is a loyalist to Bettman, a loyalist to the NHL, a guy who I think is inner circle when it comes to these sorts of things. So for him to kind of step out of line and try to reach out to somebody in the front office during the season obviously is not going to sit well with them. And
yep.
But are you where are you on the whole conflict of interest thing? Like, are you comfortable that they sussed it out and that it wasn't an issue once the wheels got? Because I did hear that one point where Daly's like saying, well, obviously anything that the Leafs do, they're going to have to come to us for permission to talk to Brendan, mm-hmm. which of course is horseshit because they're going to feel out Brendan before they ask for permission. Mm-hmm. But does that make it better for you at all?
I still don't like it. I still don't like it for the conflict of interest, even just for the optics of it. And, you know, even if, put it this way, Greg, even if the Maple Leafs had reached out to Brendan, say, 2 weeks ago and said, you know what? Let's pick up this conversation when the season is over. Just the very fact that you've reached out, and then you put yourself in the shoes of Brendan Shanahan. You're thinking, it's like when you have a new job coming, right, Wish? You're like, okay, I just got to get through this right now because I got this other great job coming on the horizon. And it does sort of, it does color your view of that organization going forward from the moment you had that initial conversation and even just the discussion of the potential of the position of president of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It does, even if you said, okay, you know what, we can't go any further, let's pick this thing up at the end of the season, even though you've had that, even when you've had that initial conversation at that point, the rest of the season you could say that person has been tainted in his view of that organization, where which a presidency exists down the road when the season ends. I still don't like it. I still don't like it.
But. Yeah. I feel you. I feel you. Real quick on the Randy Carlyle presser, and then we're done with Leafs talk today.
welcome to Leafs Lunch.
Because we have Craig Custance of ESPN, parentheses dollar sign coming up in a second.
Paywall.
sorry. the idea that this team needs to find an identity, okay, which is a common rejoinder for the last few days of the Leafs, would indicate to me that the coach needs to be fired. Wouldn't it to you?
I am so fed up with hearing this. I mean, there's... You know what creates identity? And you know what creates culture? Winning. That's it. This idea that we need to change the culture of this team. You know what does that? Wins. Find me one team that wins that you don't look at and say, yeah, they have a good culture. That's it. You win, you have a good culture. You lose... Culture is an issue. We don't have a good culture. That's why we're losing. Like, find me one losing team that has good culture. Like, the buzzwords that have been thrown around this year more so. Well, I was talking about, you know, the terms, you know, backside pressure and active stick and all that have made their way into the actual game itself. Well, all this stuff outside of the game right now is kind of driving me crazy with all it is complete empty calorie words.
When you try to create an identity for yourself, you end up with an identity crisis. See Washington Capitals, which have had no less than four different identities in the last 4 years. See also Vancouver Canucks, in which they took one identity, trashed it, hired a guy, tried to get another identity. That didn't work. The GM said, I want to go back to the first identity, and then he was fired. So this is what happens when you start to try to artificially implant a personality on a team rather than, like you just said, allowing that personality to kind of come forth through the style of play, the style of players, and most of all, through success and confidence. You cannot – I don't think you can come into a situation and be like, we're going to play this kind of hockey, because inevitably you're going to have people on that roster that aren't wired that way or that are wired to play another kind of hockey. It just doesn't work.
And you know what you see – and you know where you see a clash as well is – let me take Ottawa for example. Ottawa and Paul McLean finally admitted this yesterday, even though he's been pestered about it. I think it was yesterday he admitted this. Even though he's been pestered about it and always denied it all season long. The Ottawa Senators very specifically changed the way they played this season, and you saw the effects, and they weren't good. And this is a complete disconnect between the coach and the general manager. And if you look at what the general manager has done, specifically on the defense, what he's done is Ryan Murray has handed, outside of Eric Karlsson, has handed Paul McLean a pretty big defense. Now, you make the argument it's a pretty young defense, but Eric Kreiber and Patrick Wierkosz, just some big boys back there. And
yeah,
if you look at...
There's some meat.
Right.
Meat on the back line.
But
yes.
The problem is, all of a sudden this year, Paul McLean goes back to his old Detroit Red Wings roots and wants to play a Detroit Red Wings style of defense, which is you surrender the line, everything is towards the middle, you leave everything to the outside, and you don't challenge the blue line. The thought there being, if we have fast enough wingers, it is not the defenseman's responsibility to take on the man with the puck. It is the trailing winger. That is his job all of a sudden. The defense just backs in and goes slowly towards the net.
But
you can't challenge at the line in that. But
he's got one Nick Lidstrom and then five Mark Storts.
Well, and here
Brad Storts.
Yeah, and you saw what happened with the Ottawa Senators this year. How many times did you watch Ottawa Senators games go, man, they're giving up the blue line easy. Like completely simple because Paul McLean was trying to get the Ottawa Senators to play a Detroit Red Wings style of defense. That's how the Red Wings play. That's how they played in the glory years, and that's still how they play right now. They surrender that, thinking it is the speedy winger's responsibility to pick up that man. Now, I came back to my original point. The one thing that creates identity and sustains identity is the same thing we've been talking about since this league started. Wins. That's it. Mm-hmm. When you win, you create an identity. When you lose, you have an identity issue.
All we're talking about is
better players and wins.
I'll go one further, because I'll say that single players can also create identity. And I'm telling you, man, you talk about identity crisis with the Ottawa Senators, and you talk about the bad start that they had. Mm-hmm. When you lose your captain, when you lose the guy who is the veteran in the glorious mix of veterans and young players that they had last year under Paul McLean, then you will enter into an identity crisis. I think sometimes it can be that too. It could be a simple case of losing a personality, losing a player, and then all of a sudden you've got to find yourself. It happens a lot when players get hurt. It happens a lot when the big dog goes down, and then you got to kind of find yourself. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning began the year as Steven Stamkos' team. When he went down, they became Ben Bishop's team, and that was beneficial.
See, I don't know that Tampa really changed the way that they played, though, did they? I mean, they were still a pretty up-tempo team.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat, and, well, when he was there, Marty St. Louis, were the stars of the show. And the emergence of Victor Hedman certainly helped. Maybe the most improved player in the NHL this year. And, yes, you're right, Ben. It became, I think, the face of the franchise changed and became more about Ben Bishop.
Yes, that's my point. Their identity shifted. And I think, I'm not saying that they started playing a defensive shell.
Right.
But obviously you had people all throughout the lineup that really kind of stepped up. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think winning does it. But I think there are other things that can either create an identity crisis or – I mean, look, best example of all time, Eric, Mark Messier, Scott Stevens. The personalities of those teams dramatically changed once those players were added to the mix in New York and New Jersey. True?
Yeah, once those final pieces were put in place, too. That really helped.
Well, you had to build around them. I mean, yeah. but Messier was basically like the Genesis Project from Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan. They fired him into the planet, and then all of a sudden the Edmonton Oilers grew around him. You know, and in Stevenson's case, Stevens goes to the Devils, and he hits terra firma, and all of a sudden now a defensive system grows around him.
You know what, that's interesting, too, because on the on our Hockey Central preview show yesterday, I was working in the strategy room, and Denny was in there, and he isolated one thing from the 1984 Stanley Cup Final. And it was game two, I think it was. It was one play that Mark Messier made. Mark Messier coming down the right side, cut across to get away from Denny Potvin into Gordy and sort of tied him up, deked him out, and went short side on Billy Smith. And Denny said, when I went back to the bench, all the Islanders players sort of looked at each other and said, they're not scared of us anymore because Mark Messier went right at us. He said that was the first, because the year before, I remember how the Islanders went all over the Oilers. Like, that was it. The Oilers were supposed to be this, oh, here comes the young new rock stars, the big superstars in the game. And the Islanders were the grizzled veterans and the men of will that knew how to win hockey games. Then he said, up and down the bench, when Messier scored that goal, we all knew it was over. And that was it was the Oilers' time. And that was a singular effort by Mark Messier. Just saying, forget it, I'm going right at these guys.
Al Bueno writes in, Dallas is a great example of letting the identity form.
Yeah, that's right. I just had Dylan in my ear a second. What'd you say?
Dallas is a great example of letting the identity form. I think Columbus is a great example of letting the identity form, too. It comes down from Todd Richards, but this mix of grit and being real tough, the vicious forecheck and then Bob in the back is something that kind of just came along.
It's the truth.
Organically.
We got to call Craig because Dylan's in our ear barking at us to get going.
All right, fine, big time producer guy. Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Oh, Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
The best one.
I had my vasectomy a couple years ago. One of the great thrills was I got to sit around and watch Littlest Hobo episodes. It may be the greatest theme song for any television show I've ever heard in my life.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Well, the littlest hobo, he's eating out of cans and playing with his dog. Littlest hobo, he's jumping on trains. He needs such a pie because he's so little.
Debate Hockey.
The show's not actually about a hobo.
No, it's about a dog. It's a hybrid of a German Shepherd and a Husky.
The dog's a... It's about a dog?
Yeah, dude. You've never watched Littlest Hobo?
No!
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
That might be my favorite moment ever on this podcast. When you came across the realization that it wasn't a real hobo, but it was a dog.
A couple things before Craig Custance joins us. Real quick. No Ben Bishop for game one for the Lightning and the Canadiens. Can the Bolts win a series with Anders Lindback?
Oh, sir? With the small goaltender? With the smaller of the two? The tiny goaltender, Anders Lindback?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, you mean the first star of the week in the NHL, that Anders Lindback? Guy?
And the Lightning media have all written that story.
I know, it's an easy headline.
Lindback proves he's ready for postseason.
Clearly.
Really? Oh, yeah, totally. Because, you know, game three in Bell Center is going to be just like a bullshit garbage game at the end of the season.
A throwaway game where half the roster is scratched.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's totally the same thing.
I love when people do this to me. Make me feel old. Monica McAllister tweets in, hashtag taking notes, use curious during interviews, hashtag side note, I was in middle school in 1995.
Damn.
Oh, damn you, Monica.
And also, it appears as though Ville Leano will be bought out by the Buffalo Sabres.
Shocking. What? No goals and $4.5 million?
One of the single worst and also botched signings of all time. I mean, because let's not forget, sir, that not only was it a bad signing, but it was a bad signing of a player they then tried to force into a position he wasn't familiar with, which is just asinine.
Usually doesn't end well.
Joining us now on the line, a man who hopefully you all read. You ante up and read because he's one of our favorite hockey writers and a pal of mine when I go on the road. He is Craig Custance of ESPN and ESPN the magazine, and he joins us now in the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hello, Craig. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Hopefully, we're just hoping that people read my stuff. I'll take it.
Well, I assume they do. I assume that they read your stuff. I assume that all the people that used to read you at the Sporting News rushed over to ESPN and are still on the Craig Custance bandwagon, as I imagine would be a good thing for their lives. We begin, sir, with let's get your thoughts on this Brendan Shanahan thing. Obviously, this is still the story of the day in the National Hockey League. First, your thoughts on Shanny joining the Leafs. Second, your thoughts on what is sticking in Merrick's craw, which is Tim Leiwicki reaching out to an NHL employee during the season to cut this deal.
Who, by the way, let me add the caveat there. Whose decisions directly impact on Tim Leiwicki's team?
Yeah, that's a tough one because you know, Brendan. I mean, the Leafs aren't the first team to inquire about Brendan Shanahan. So, I mean, when you have people he's not the first person to come out of the NHL front offices to get a job running a team. So, I don't know how else you handle that. I mean, going to Greg's first question, to me, it's an interesting trend that we're now seeing around the NHL, and I was just having a conversation about this with someone today. We saw it with Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh in Colorado, then Pat LaFontaine in Buffalo, and we're seeing it in Vancouver, and now where you bring in this former player and you give him this power as a president, and it's almost like the GM job is now the new assistant GM job, and the assistant GM, I guess, would be the assistant to the GM. I don't know how further down you go there. And I don't know if that's the best situation because I think what's happening in Colorado is unique and we want to see it play out, but a lot of that success is because of Patrick Waugh, and it's not necessarily enough to get anything away from Joe Sakic, but a lot of those guys that are succeeding in Colorado were brought in by Greg Sherman. Patrick Waugh has done an incredible job as a coach, and they've gotten great goaltending, and that together has made a situation in Colorado that is really hard to duplicate. And now we're seeing teams, and maybe they're not following that path. It just looks like from, you know, a big picture trend point of view that these other teams are trying to duplicate that. And I think that's really hard to do.
You know, I wonder too, that's an interesting point about how GMs now are really sort of becoming assistant general managers. I wonder how much of that is, you know, going back to 2005 and the introduction of the salary cap, which, you know, every time the CBA expires, you know, gets tighter and tighter, and there are various reins that are put on general managers. You know, in a lot of ways, Craig, the art of being a GM is done and gone. There will be no more Sam Pollocks. There will be no more Bill Torres. That day when you are the architect of that organization and you control everything, that day is gone. How much of that, though, do you think is because there is a salary cap and you can't spend to create more new money, that everything has become its own little department? How much do you think that the salary cap sort of necessitated things like, you know, president of hockey operations, president of the team, people that exist that one or two layers above the GM?
Yeah, I think it's part of the salary cap. I think there's an appeal by ownership to bring in these former players and bring in these big names. And to do it as the role of the general manager, I think, is a challenge because that's a lot of work. You have to put a lot of man hours into going on the road, seeing your AHL team, you're managing salary caps, you're evaluating talent, you're shaking hands in the community. If you're a former, look at Brett Hall would be the example. Like, if you're a former player like Brett Hall, I mean, is that really what you want to be doing all the time? To me, it's almost this extra layer. Now you can still have this guy be with all this hockey knowledge, be a part of the team and be a part of, I mean, in charge of the decision making in some cases, then you still have, like, that GM job, you have to be kind of a grinder. You look at the guys that are out there. I love Tim Murray in Buffalo, like what he brings. And it just came through Detroit, and I was talking to someone. I'm like, hey, is Tim around? I'd love to chat with him. And he said, you know, he's never around. In his theory is he sees this team. He knows this team. He wants to see every other team and evaluate all this other talent. And you want your GM to be able to do that. And so by creating this extra layer, then you can still have the appeal of having that former player and the star who's out there and you know, relate to the community and the players. You also have that GM that's doing a lot of that, you know, the work on the ground that's important.
Well, Tim Murray is Dwight Schrute. I mean, I think we've established this. There's a direct,
did you guys really? I like that.
A direct resemblance, and also a direct work ethic that I think is shared between those two. Craig, are you ever in favor of the idea of a salary cap for executives, for the front office, and for coaches?
Wow.
I hate that idea. Who wants to do that?
Ownership. Trust me.
I'm not in favor of it, but I've had this argument with people around the league occasionally, some of the more forward thinkers, that say, well, you know what, we cap the amount of money that you can spend on talent on the ice. Why don't we force the same sort of thrifty spending when it comes to the front office and when it comes to coaches? I've heard that thought.
Hang on.
Philosophically, okay, though, guys, hang on one second, because philosophically that works, because the goal of the salary cap was to level the playing field. The competitive balance no longer goes to the rich teams, but they still do have a competitive. There is still a competitive imbalance in that richer teams can afford a more bloated front office staff. It doesn't always translate into wins or Stanley Cups or championships of any sort, but it does give you a better chance. If anything, you could say it violates the spirit of the salary cap.
Wow, I think that's why do we have to dumb everything down for these other teams? Like, I mean, I guess I get the salary cap a little bit, but to do that, like, it goes back. I remember at the GM's meeting that the big debate was, should these big market teams not be allowed to fly in all the draft prospects and interview them and run through their own combine?
Yeah.
Because that gives them some sort. If you're willing to spend whatever it is, I forgot what the number, but a GM told me what they spent per head on each kid to bring them in. But, you know, let's say it's $100,000 or whatever it is going to be over the course of a draft year. If you're willing to do that, I mean, why do we have to limit people from trying to do their job well in the, just for a competitive balance? I mean, the cap, is that enough? I mean, be creative and let these owners spend their money. I mean, if you can't afford to compete under that system, then don't own a team.
Speaking of financial constraints, by the way, you blogged about, am I allowed to say blogged, Craig? Can I say blogged?
You can say yes.
You blogged about the Nashville Predators and Barry Trotz this week, about the future of Trotz, the future of the Preds. You brought up one name that I think a lot of people have bought up, and in fact will be the coach of the U.S. national team, Peter Laviolette, as the next potential head coach of the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know if it's too obvious. I mean, you make the connection with David Poile, and he was on the staff for the Olympic team, and lots of connections there with USA Hockey and Poile and Peter Laviolette. But at the same time, I think it's a good fit in that, you know, you look at that team, unless they trade Shea Weber and do something dramatic, the way the contract structure is set up, I don't see a lot of personnel movement coming. So the coach was the one area that they could address and hopefully make some improvements on. And you bring in a guy like Peter Laviolette, and that's a pretty big change, you know, from Barry Trotz. And I think it would be a good fit there. Now, the flip side to me, and I mentioned it in that blog, was that if you're Peter Laviolette, is that where you're going to pick? I mean, I think he's going to have his choice of a couple good jobs here. And to me, he's the best candidate on the market. So do you want to go to Nashville where it's a smaller market team that maybe doesn't want to spend to the cap every year? That's on the young side, or is there going to be a better job that opens up with, you know, let's say the Capitals job opens up, or Vancouver, or one of these other jobs? Is that the more appealing job? So to me, I make them down to what Peter believes is a better fit.
Do you think that the personnel or the style of play changes along with the new coach that comes into Nashville, or do you say to yourself, listen, our best player is Shea Weber, our second best player is Pekka Rinne, we're playing defense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that. To me, I'm trading Shea Weber. But I mean, this is another conversation for another day.
Yeah.
And I know those guys like that don't come down the path very often. But I mean, this is a guy, let's not forget, he signed an offer sheet with another team. It wasn't like the Flyers made him do that. This was a guy that willingly signed to go play for another team. And so that, to me, and I mean, this was supposed to be one of your leaders. And that, to me, is an indication that maybe things aren't perfect. And then if you can cash out now, and again, I know how hard it is to get a franchise deal like that. And the team that trades the guy probably isn't going to win the deal in the long term. But maybe if you just get completely overwhelmed, that's the way for a small market team to load up on young players, and then you just have a great goalie in Pekka Rinne, and you go from there. Because, I mean, what an asset that is. And if he's not completely convinced it's going to work and this is the peak of his value, I think that's something you should explore.
Interesting. Mr. Custance, thoughts on the Andrew McDonald 6-year, $30 million contract with the Philadelphia Flyers today?
It's perfect, right, for the Flyers?
I mean, yeah, so, it's perfect for the Flyers. Absolutely right. Yes, this is true.
It is. But I know, like, you know, I'm an advanced stat guy, and we know his possession numbers aren't particularly good. And there was a great breakdown. I tweeted it earlier today, and I wish I could give credit to the blog that posted it. They really broke down why, when you watch him, you appreciate blocking shots. You're like, boy, I like this guy. And then you look at his numbers, you're like, oh, boy, there's a lot of shots on your own goalie when he's on the ice.
It's Broad Street Hockey broke it down. And basically, what they found, to summarize it, is that he plays really well in his own end. Well, not really well. He plays well in his own end, block shots, but basically is a turnstile at the blue line for opposing forwards, and that's why his possession numbers stink. But go ahead. So we're kind of in agreement that the advanced metrics on McDonald don't necessitate a 6-year deal. Yeah.
No, but you knew it was going to happen the second they traded for him. It's such a Flyers. I mean, and I saw Paul Holmgren at the GM's meetings, and he said, we love him and we want to get it done. Now, all that said, I mean, we're not crazy about the number of the term for a player where the numbers, you know, the advanced stats don't equate. And this isn't an Andrew McDonald thing, but I think fans are going to have to come to terms with some of the deals that are going to be signed between now and in the summer, because there's so little talent available on the free agent market, and there's going to be so much money available that contracts that we're all used to that we saw under the last system and even last year with the cap coming down, those are going to look a lot more reasonable than what we're seeing moving forward. So we have to, I think, you know, hockey fans and those of us that are analyzing these deals have to kind of make that mental adjustment and just realize these deals are going to be higher, and we're not going to see some of these contracts we saw in the past that are going to look much more reasonable.
You know, it does, you know, it really does fit with the Flyers' MO, you know, going back to the team's inception. They don't draft and develop their defensemen, they trade and buy them. That's really the way the Philadelphia Flyers have always existed. Curious about the general manager there. Does Paul Holmgren stay, or does it become Ron Hextall's team? And if Paul Holmgren does stay, could you see Ron Hextall going to Toronto?
Well, I think Ron Hextall, I mean, you don't bring in a guy like that essentially in a lateral move, or you don't make that move if you don't think there's an opportunity there. And I picked the Rangers to win in five, and I think if that happens, Paul Holmgren has to be in trouble. But that said, I mean, he just signed a guy he traded for to a pretty long-term lucrative contract, and so that to me is an indication he still has support from ownership. If you're an owner and you're on the fence on a GM and he comes and puts that on your table, you might go, you know, and you're thinking about firing him, you might say, you know, let's wait a couple of weeks before I sign off on any deals that you're constructing. So that to me, I mean, that's a sign that perhaps they, you know, they want to stick with Paul Holmgren there. But I think eventually at some point, Ron Hextall will be running that team.
Interesting. Last one for me, Craig, and thank you for your time today.
Yes.
Of the National Hockey League awards that we are voting on this week, is there one that is sort of a surprise pick from you? Because I sent in my picks last night. I'm a little depressed that I would say of the major awards, what, all of them are pretty well settled? I'd say maybe outside of the Norris. Is there one that kind of you went with it in a different direction than the expected pick?
I have not submitted my ballot yet, so I'm still kind of wavering. And the hardest one for me has been the Norris. And I don't think I'm going to make a pick that's going to make any waves there. It's such a challenge, that one and the Selke. And look, believe me, I think it's a good thing that these aren't so difficult. I don't want any controversy with the horse this year. You know, look, if we just have a year where I was like, oh, good, that worked out great for everyone, I'm more than happy.
Well, listen, don't put Ovechkin down for the Norris. That's the only advice I can give you. People will notice.
I appreciate that.
And he's no longer a rookie either, so he's out of the Calder race.
Well, shoot, I got to rework my ballot. I think the Norris to me will be the interesting one, because really the Selke's interesting, but I don't know how much the fans are going to be all worked up if it's Patrice Bergeron versus Kopitar versus Backes or Taves. And then I had another name thrown at me. Someone said, well, why not Joe Pavelski? And I had a hard time arguing against that. And I like, maybe not for winning it, putting him on the ballot. And another one was, I had a conversation with Dan Biles, and when they came through here, he was talking about the role he's been playing Sidney Crosby in. A little more defensive, a lot of defensive zone starts against the opposing team's top line. And I said, well, what's been the result? And he said, you know, the result is he thinks Sidney Crosby should be in the Selke discussion, which I thought was an interesting answer. So, I mean, I think there's some interesting debate there, but, you know, I don't think anything on my ballot is going to make news. At least I hope not.
I'd throw Marian Hossa into that conversation for the past couple of years as well.
Yeah, I agree. I love Marian Hossa. You know, we seem to, whatever reason, we seem to want to just kind of revert to a center there. And mm-hmm. I think that's a mistake with Marian.
100% true. It's, the bias towards the middle guy. Okay, my last one for you, Craig. Greg and I were talking about this a couple of seconds ago before you joined us. Empty calorie hockey terms. We hear an active stick on the ice. Backside pressure is another one. And now this offseason, with every press conference that comes every single day, we hear a lot of talk about changing culture and things like that. Do you, Craig Custance, have a favorite empty calorie hockey term that you're hearing way too much these days?
You know, the one I keep hearing, and now I've learned, it only took me 10 years of doing this to point something out, but the one everyone wants to talk about is hockey sense.
Yep.
And I think when people talk about that, it means different things to different people. So I would say, you know, they'd say, this guy has great hockey sense. And then I'll go, oh, yeah, you're right. I agree. And I didn't really know exactly what they meant by that when you came to particular players. And so, like, for instance, I'm working right now on a Gustav Nyquist piece, and that's one of the things over and over again. I talked to Håkan Andersson, the scout was over in Sweden, talked to Blashill, the coach in the AHL, and I talked to his college coach in Maine. And over again, it's a new hockey sense. And then I would say, well, what does that mean to you with Gustav Nyquist? And each guy gave a different answer and examples of what hockey sense with Gustav Nyquist meant to them. And so, you know, I think taking that extra step and saying, you know, when you say active stick or you say hockey sense, what exactly do you mean? And I think that's when you can kind of shine a light on a player.
Can I give you my definition of hockey sense?
Yes.
Doesn't make bad plays. pretty simple. Yeah, once upon a time, this was pretty simple. We just say, yeah, you know, he's a good hockey player. Doesn't make bad plays. You know, he doesn't cough the puck up.
Yeah.
You know, now it's got a fancy term for it. Good hockey sense. Good hockey IQ.
And once we grasp onto a phrase, well, then we all just beat, like, you know, the Kings became the heavy team in the West. And I'm as guilty as anybody. I mean, I'm the first one to call the Kings heavy. But then everybody, you know, then the Blues are a heavy team. And well, what is that, you know, heavy? I mean, why are we accusing that every second now?
It's funny. I was at Team Canada orientation camp in 2009 in Calgary. And when the first time we heard the phrase, I was standing right beside Mike Babcock when he said it, the first time we heard the phrase 200-foot player. It was in the scrum. It was on day two, and someone said, what kind of hockey are you looking for? What kind of player? He said, I'm looking for 200-foot hockey players. And it was like an orgasmic frenzy in that scrum. Everyone like, oh, we have a new term to use. We have a new term to use. It was Craig. And we keep hearing it to this day. We need 200-foot hockey players. And I remember I was there for the genesis of it. It was fantastic.
So Babs gets the credit for that one, eh?
That's Mike Babcock, 100%, in Calgary, day two, Team Canada Rotation Camp 2009.
All right.
Cool. Awesome. All right, Craig Custance of ESPN and ESPN The Magazine, thank you for joining us on the podcast today, and we will see you out there during the Cup playoffs, sir.
Thanks, bud.
I will see you both out there. Thanks for having me.
The great Craig Custance.
Good. That is a good one, hockey sense.
Hockey sense.
Oh, just all so nice and vague. You don't have to actually drill down. Drill down, there's another term. Don't have to actually get to something. Don't have to actually say something. It's got a good hockey IQ.
I was under the impression that that the Selke was settled.
Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
That's what I
mean. I did my picks last night, poured myself a nice glass of scotch, sat down, put on... Well, I didn't really put on anything that would help me pick hockey, but it definitely kept me from ever doing heroin or going to the refrigerator. I put on Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, yeah.
Darren Aronofsky film, Bad Addiction.
Yeah.
And then sat down and did my picks. Not revealing them quite yet. That'll come on Puck Daddy later today. But, I mean, Sid for Hart, Bergeron for Selke, McKinnon for Calder.
Easy. Rask for Vezina?
Well, I don't pick the Vezina.
Okay, fair enough.
See, the Vezina and the Norris are the two that I think are still sort of at issue. I mean, as much as I've made the case for Babcock and think that there'll be support for Babcock, I think Waugh's a lock for the Jack.
Yep, they've done a great job of marketing Patrick Waugh.
So maybe the Bing, the Norris, and the Vezina are the only ones that are at issue. Because, I mean, the Lady Bing can go in a number of different directions. Like, I could see there hasn't been a movement for it. I will say he's on my ballot, but Timo Solani would be an interesting pick for the Bing, don't you think?
Yeah, to close out the career. Yeah.
Especially given recent events with Jaguar.
I just hate the way it's voted on right now. I don't think that it should just be high-skill low-pims.
No, it shouldn't. So that's at issue. The Norris is at issue. You have Camp Chara. You've got Camp Keith. You have Camp Weber. Giordano deserves mention. Carlson's going to get support because he finished on top of the league.
If Mark Giordano didn't have all that injury time off this year, he'd be right in there with Chara and Keith.
He would be. I think he is. And then you have the Vezina.
And you know what?
Where...
Here's another. Let me just get a quick little thing here about Mark Giordano. I don't know that I've seen a defenseman get better when his supporting cast around him of solid NHL defensemen gets depleted.
It has gotten worse.
Yeah,
right?
Like, okay, Bomeister gone, he gets better. Robin Regier gone, he gets better. Like, everyone, Dion Phaneuf, he gets better. Like, it's remarkable. Like, every time they take a piece away from Mark Giordano and that blue line, Mark Giordano gets better.
Yeah, and then you had this whole thing where people are like, you know, looking at this and saying, they put the C on him? Who?
Yep, absolutely.
But then you look into it and you're like, it makes complete sense once you 100%. Go into the numbers and see how much he means when he's on the ice and all that other jive. The more I think about it, the more I read about it, the more I noodle it through, I think Varlamov's going to steal the Vezina.
You do, eh?
And I'll tell you why. It's a GM's award, right?
Yep.
Western Conference, who's stealing votes from Varlamov? Who? Who's the guy?
You could make an argument for Jonas Hiller, although he had a bad run down the stretch.
Exactly. And there are other goaltenders, Anderson and Fath, before he was traded,
and John Gibbs
who also did pretty well in that system. Yeah. I don't think there's another goaltender in the Western Conference that touches Varlamov's jock this year as far as being as good as he's been. Who's stealing votes from Tuukka Rask in the Eastern Conference?
Ben Bishop.
And?
Henrik Lundqvist.
And? Carey Price.
Oh, of course. Jeez, yeah, of course. Carey Price.
Yeah. So you're dealing with...
Well, hang on a second here. So you're saying that there's a bias amongst general managers only to watch their conference? Hold on a second.
I'm saying that you see the same guy, you know, upwards of six times, he might leave an impression on you. But I'm also saying that there are guys that are going to siphon votes away from Tuukka Rask that may not necessarily siphon votes away from Varlamov. Now, here's the mitigating factor that I can't figure out. Will general managers withhold their vote for Varlamov because of the domestic violence thing this year?
I don't think so. No, he's acquitted.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
There's a lot of God-fearing moral men up there, sir.
I think they might.
I think that could be an issue.
I'll tell you what.
But if you're going straight voting, I think Varlamov steals the Vezina.
Here's something interesting. I haven't read the piece yet, but sometimes you can tell who wants to get booked on radio interviews by the pieces they write.
Yeah.
Ryan Getzlaff of the Anaheim Ducks is the NHL's MVP, writes Elliot Friedman in his 30 Thoughts. Does he just want to get producers from all over North America in hockey markets calling him to go on the radio station to defend this? I haven't read the piece yet, but it seems
it's indefensible.
Well, it just does. I haven't read the piece to hear a justification of it, but my first thought is Elliot bored? Does Elliot really want radio producers to call him and book him on shows?
He's not usually like this, though. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
we should call him and get him on. Why not?
I'm sure he's got a hell of a justification for it.
I'm sure he always does.
Here's a number I can throw at.
That's my first
instinct. Here's the number I can throw at you in the defense case against Ryan Getzlaf winning the MVP. Okay. The number is 81. That is the number of games Corey Perry played this year.
Hmm.
Here's the number in favor of Sidney Crosby. That'd be 60. That'd be the number of games Evgeny Malkin played this year.
Right. Okay.
Also, I can't find it, but whatever number of games Chris Letang played this year, whatever number of games Paul Martin played this year, whatever number of, and so on. I love Elliot. I'm sure when we read this thing, we're going to be like, wow, that's amazing. And look at the advanced stats that he used. That'll certainly make Tyler Dello happy. But I don't see there being a case for anybody but Sidney Crosby winning the Hart.
This is now an ad for CBCSports.ca. That's what our podcast has become, driving people to. They don't already
all
go
the family,
anyway.
My friend. It's all the family. Our question of the day that we put to you is, who wins the Western Conference? In the time remaining on the podcast, we're going to break down some of the matchups in the West. Who wins the Western Conference? Matt says it feels like a rematch between L.A. and Chicago. L.A. is built to go all the way. He stole Minnesota Wild because I'm an irrationally optimistic fan and proud of it. Jeremy Wiebe writes in, San Jose, great puck possession team and a good mix of skill and toughness. Ken Mahar, got to go with the Hawks. Experience and depth. No West team is a solid four lines
and Taves
like
and
the
Kane
Hawks
are back.
Do.
And Taves and Kane are back.
I think the LA Kings has four solid lines.
Yeah, I love the. Listen, man, I don't know if it's going to be the highest scoring series. I'm pretty sure that it's not. But that to me is going to be one of the more intriguing series, considering, you know, specifically that you look at both teams and say they play the same style.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not as if, you know, some guy's, you know, style of kung fu is White Crane and the other guy is Tiger. They play the exact same style of game.
Mm-hmm. One guy plays a Roberto Luongo style of goaltending. The other guy plays a Tim Thomas style of goaltending, for example. Chris Boulay writes in, the Avalanche, because Patrick Waugh is wonderful and we're all secretly happy he is back.
Wouldn't it be an interesting story? Interesting story if Patrick Waugh's Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup this year? Not just for the obvious, oh, wow, they're last place and come in and win the Stanley Cup. But if you look at Patrick Waugh's career, as a rookie, he won the Stanley Cup in 1986. As a rookie head coach with the Quebec Ramparts, the Memorial Cup, he won the Memorial Cup. And how much of a fairy tale ending would it be to his coaching career now if in his rookie season he again wins the big prize? Like every time he's every time that guy's been a rookie, he's won the championship.
That's a tremendous point, and it would actually only be a fairy tale if that win came against
Montreal. It's got to be against
Montreal. Of course. I'll settle for Boston, though. That's some old school original six hate there too.
Don't know what
that's
that
means.
Fine. Not sure what this original six
here. Also, by the way, it would be the Ray Bourque redemption. final.
It would be too. By the way, speaking of original six, taste in my mouth. Got a funny reminder from someone the other day, and I used to use this all the time, and I've forgotten. You know who calls it the original six? Nobody. You know what people in Montreal call it, Greg?
What?
The original one, and every other team is an expansion team.
Ryan J., Dallas, just because of rooting interest of Tyler Seguin returning to Boston with the cup on the line. Norm writes in San Jose, they owe people like me and you who have been picking them for years. You're damn right they do.
They owe you nothing. They have beaten you into the ground. That girl don't love you.
Vellucci, the Avalanche because they have the best goaltending out there and they have Ryan O'Reilly. Uncle Purple, the Blues, or at least get to the Western Conference Finals so the Sabres can get another first rounder.
Oh, yeah, they need more.
And so on and so forth. So a lot of people saying this, that Jimmy the B, San Jose Sharks win the West because I'm a fan and want Wyshynski to be right in his cup prediction. No, I agree with you on that one. Yeah, I'm sticking with the Sharks. I think the Sharks will win in seven against the Kings, and away we go after that. I'm a little nervous about the goaltending. I don't want Stalak anywhere near this series. I want Niemi to go the distance, and I'm hoping that his last start is the thing that resets the circuitry and he's okay now. But Hurdle coming back does some interesting things to that lineup. I will always pick a Larry Robinson defense in the playoffs, and I really believe that there is something inherently special about this team this year, and I think they're going to pull it off.
Unlike last year and the year before, and the year before with the San Jose Sharks, and the year before that with the San Jose Sharks, and that year they brought in Roenick and Claude Lemieux, and you said, okay, you got experience now. And
well, that's the problem. The problem is when they went and got Claude Lemieux, they bought in a turtle. But now they have a hurdle. That's the difference.
Oh, man. I really need to barf.
Who do you like in the Sharks and the Kings series?
I said San Jose, and I'll stick to it. I don't think that Sharks team that we saw down the stretch is a real Sharks team. And maybe I'm just saying it because of my heart, but damn it, I just want to see Joe Thornton win something big like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then how he reacts.
Well, and that's just it. Hey, Mike O'Connell, trade me.
Oh, I meant
hey,
more
Jeremy
along,
Jacobs.
I meant more along the lines of what would wind up in the cup.
I was thinking of what his celebration was going to be like when he gets the cup. Gary exactly. Bettman. Hold on a second, Gary.
Just hold that Conn Smythe in place, sir. Don't let it move. Patrick Groover, how about if Patrick Waugh wins a Stanley Cup this year and it's against Detroit? Now, there's your throwback series.
That's good, too.
That's very good.
Oh, my God, that's Chris Osgood's music.
Exactly. The other series, Dallas and the Ducks. I feel like there's a lot of people that are looking at this series and seeing Bruce Boudreau and seeing Jonas Hiller and seeing the enthusiasm on the Dallas side and thinking to themselves this will be an upset. I disagree. I think that the Ducks win in five.
Yeah, I think the Ducks in that one too. I think, you know, acquisitions like Stefan Robidoux, the deadline really, ironically enough, coming from the Dallas Stars, really did help that Anaheim Ducks squad. And I think, you know, the Dallas Stars this year probably play the role of we're just happy to be in here finally. Mm. You know, this is get a little playing time before they really get to the big leagues.
The Colorado Avalanche and the Minnesota Wild is a very intriguing series. Now, if Varlamov is Varlamov,
yes.
Landeskog is making his first appearance in the Stanley Cup playoffs, as are a number of the Avalanche players. I think when people talk about them not being sustainable, they're not only talking about their style of play, we're also talking about a blue line that on paper is the worst blue line in the playoffs. Would you agree?
Yeah, and the man-to-man continues.
Mm-hmm.
For the Avs.
I think the Wild have a number of things going in their direction. One of them is not goaltending. I am, as much as people want to talk about what Colorado does not being sustainable, I do not believe for a second that the Minnesota goaltending situation is sustainable either.
Briz is ready for a meltdown in game two. Watch.
Well, it's not like we haven't seen it before in the playoffs. Right?
Yeah, I know.
I like Colorado. I don't know if I like them in five or seven. Is the thing.
I'll take
it. So I'll hold off on assigning games, but
okay.
Yeah, Colorado Avalanche are going to win the series.
Yeah, I like Avs in that one, even though they are minus Matt Duchene.
But it's going to be contingent on how Landeskog and MacKinnon and other guys react to their first taste of Stanley Cup playoff hockey. It really is.
I'd be more curious about MacKinnon, less so about Gabriel Landeskog. When you look at him and you listen to him, you say to yourself, this guy's only, what is he, 22? Like, he talks and acts like he's 30, and he's been in the league for 12 years.
But you have to remember that sometimes you have to crawl before you walk, and in the case of the Wild,
yeah,
they've been knocked on their ass once in the playoffs. Like, they've been through it a little bit. So I there's a lot of reasons that you could pick the Wild in this series, but I genuinely believe that the Avalanche are going to win the series in advance.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I got abs in this one.
The Avalanche did quite well for themselves, avoiding the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. The St. Louis Blues were not as fortunate. What do you think about this series? Now, there's a couple of ways to look at it. The first way is the St. Louis Blues get a good portion of their injured players back for the first round and are able to be on the level with Chicago versus being a team that's been decimated.
Mm-hmm.
Or the St. Louis Blues are just a banged-up squad with a shaky Ryan Miller, and are walking into a buzzsaw, which are the Chicago Blackhawks with a healthy Taves and Kane.
I think the shot that St. Louis has is if David Backes can calm down. Like if David Backes, if he doesn't turn into a missile.
Curious what you mean by that, Jeff.
Well, I mean, how many times have you seen David Backes completely go off the rails?
Did you see what I did there, folks? I used that.
Curious.
Trick.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. And it made me want to give more. Well, I'll tell you something about David Backes, Greg Whiskey, since you're curious. If David Backes can stay focused and not run all over the ice trying to put the Chicago Blackhawks into the season ticket holders' laps, then I think the St. Louis Blues have a shot. But if I am the Chicago Blackhawks, I'm doing whatever it takes, right? Andrew Shaw, sick him on, get him out there. to get David Backus off his game and get him running around a little bit, and Steve Ott as well. See, to me the curious thing is how Ken Hitchcock is going to settle down his bench.
When we talked about this yesterday with Bernie Federico, Hall of Famer, he said that he didn't think that the Blues would do much running around. That despite the presence of Backus, Ott, and LaPierre on that roster, they are not going to be the team that tries to play the agitation role.
That is the hope if you're the St. Louis Blues. That is what Ken Hitchcock is hoping, and that is what St. Louis Blues fans are hoping as well. The reality, though, may prove to be something quite different. Don't you think? I mean, it's not as if we haven't seen it before.
I still have faith that Ryan Miller can be a factor in this series, despite the fact that he hasn't played well lately. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the team that's been in front of him.
Yeah.
Although, Lord knows he should be used to playing well in the back of a bad team. I will pick the Chicago Blackhawks in six. I think the Blues will make it interesting. I do, at the end of the day, think they don't have enough offense. And maybe they need to go outside the house to get some this summer. And I think at the end of the day, the Blackhawks are very adept at winning games away from home in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So these factors combined tell me Chicago in six. I love the Blackhawks, and I think it's good to have them excel in the playoffs, especially for us. They're a very popular team.
Yeah.
But if we want to go for that betterment of hockey thing, a little St. Louis Blues run is not a bad thing for hockey.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I just can't I can't see St. Louis winning more than one game, to be honest with you.
So you're thinking five?
Yeah.
So second round, Chicago and Colorado and Dallas and the Sharks. Merrick and I, once again, living up to the name on this very podcast by completely agreeing on first round.
Well, here's the thing about Colorado and Chicago is the Colorado Avalanche should probably be the only team that can skate with Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's where that series gets interesting.
There's a lot of interesting in that series.
Mm-hmm.
Quenneville versus the Avalanche.
Well, I mean, this is Quenneville versus St. Louis. Wasn't if he didn't coach there before.
Yeah. Maybe this will be the thing for them this year.
Do it for Q.
He'll beat the Blues. He'll beat Colorado. There's no tie between Quenneville and either the Sharks or the Ducks, is there? No.
No, Maple Leafs aren't in there. Hartford Whalers aren't a franchise anymore.
Well, he could beat Boston. He already did.
Play for the Colorado Rockies. Okay, they're now the New Jersey Devils. Right. They're not in either. Okay.
No. Well, there goes that idea.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the show for today. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Snappy way to wrap it up. Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet with the night off. You have the night off as well, Wish? You're doing some blogging?
Nope. Tonight we are doing at 8 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock sharp. Set your calendar, set your watches. Tell your loved ones, hurry up with dinner, folks, because the NHL draft lottery is happening. We are running a live chat on Puck Daddy for the draft lottery, and then we'll have draft lottery coverage after that. Please tune in. I was on the radio in Edmonton this morning, and we had two thoughts.
What's that?
The first is how great it would be if Edmonton got the top pick again. The second is how great would it be if the Devils won the lottery like five straight times. They had to redo it. Like five times.
Let me ask you something about tonight.
Oh, by the way, before you do that, I also love the idea of Chico Resch being the Devil's representative there, even though he's probably not. And he just gets really, really awesomely excited each time they win the lottery. Before being told that.
We did it again.
Oh, man, this is awesome. Chico, you're stuck on 30. And the winner of the lottery is the Devils. Oh, man, this is awesome. Chico, once again.
Oh. Speaking of 30, though. ISS rankings came out at midnight, and so I think I've mentioned his name on the I have talked about him on the podcast before. Number 30 according to ISS is Hunter Smith. He went through the draft last year, didn't get picked, and he may be the most improved player in all of junior hockey this year. He is the 6'6" right winger I was telling you about with the Oshawa Generals, Motor City Smitty's nephew.
Jesus.
ISS has him in at number 30. Anybody want a 6'6" winger out there? Anybody looking for a 6'6" winger? Yeah, Hunter Smith of the Oshawa Generals.
6'6".
Yeah, on the wing.
Well, good luck to all you losers out there, including my Devils, in the lottery tonight. A quick question before we go, sir. Yeah, betterment of hockey. Yep. Betterment of hockey.
Yep.
Who would be the best to get the top pick?
The best team?
Who for the betterment of hockey should get the top pick?
Betterment of hockey? hockey? From my selfish little perch?
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders.
The answer we were looking for was the Buffalo Sabres, of course.
No, you're not listening. The Islanders. Then you really have to force a decision on Gar Snow. Does he want to get rid of the first overall pick, or does he want to throw away a shot at drafting Connor McHockey?
Oh, right. That's true.
I mean, I'm like you, Ish. I go for the best story. I don't have a dog in the fight. I go for the best story. Go, Garth Snow. Tonight, you own it, sister.
And real quick, who is your top pick right now for all those draft nicks out there? Who do you think is the best prospect?
For me, I'd defer to Aaron Ekblad. Mm-hmm. The biggest riser and someone who's, you know, turning heads and may sneak into that top five is Nick Ehlers of the Halifax Mooseheads. As much as we talk about Nathan MacKinnon's flat-out speed, I think this guy's quicker. If you want size and someone that can jump into the NHL right away, Nick Ritchie, the Peterborough Pete's, is your guy. Sam Reinhart has had a really great playoffs in the Western Hockey League. He's in the top three. Sam Bennett, some concerns about, you know, how he plays the game, maybe a little bit reckless at times. But Michael Del Colo is someone that I come back to as well with the Oshawa Generals, who's almost like this Ron Francis type player. You know, he's big, he's strong, he's not overly physical, he's highly skilled. Those would be my main guys. Leon Draisaitl from Prince Albert in the Western League, the German guy who's poised to be the highest drafted German of all time. He's got to be up on the list as well. But I look for those sort of middle round picks that you hit on. So it's like a Jared McCann from Sault Ste. Marie or Robbie Fabry from Guelph or Hayden Fleury from Red Deer. These types of guys really get me excited.
My two thoughts are, as I'm looking at NHL, mynhldraft.com, mm-hmm. Brendan Perlini needs to change his name. That's way too close to Brandon Peary.
A lot of points in the power play. Buyer beware on Brendan Perlini. Good player, but buyer beware.
But we need to change his name. And then finally, mynhldraft.com believes the Devils will be drafting Anthony D'Angelo, a defenseman for Sarnia, because there aren't enough Italians in New Jersey, apparently.
Yeah, he had an interesting year where Sarnia was suspended for some, let's say, team violations that may or may not have happened in between the first and second intermission of a game not that long ago. Highly skilled defenseman, though.
What does that mean?
There was a little incident in the room. Got him a little slap on the wrist from the organization.
Is there any hint you can drop, or...
He had a disagreement with someone, maybe on his own team.
Was it a physical disagreement? Was it a disagreement with hands?
I wasn't there. I don't know.
To use terms they use at my daughter's school, did someone not respect the other person's personal bubble?
You see, you didn't say curious beforehand, so I'm not going to give you a straight answer.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Thanks to the great Craig Custance. Please read that man over at ESPN, even if you have to drop a few shekels to read him. One of the most plugged in and better writers that you'll ever read on this great game of ours. Enjoy the draft lottery. Please join us at Puck Daddy for the chat tonight. And then tomorrow during the day, before this very podcast at 1 p.m., a big-ass playoff preview live chat.
Wow.
With myself and the Puck Daddy people. So do check it out. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.